This is the Inside Track podcast by the BVRLA. Join us as we speak to high-profile guests from across rental, leasing and fleet as they discuss their careers, react to the latest news and look at what may be coming in the future. Welcome to the next episode of the BVRLA's Shine a Light series. Here, we are delving into the inner workings of one of our leasing members to hear about the progress being made in the areas of equality, diversity and inclusion. In part one, I'm joined by Heather Messenger and Pamela Davey from Arval UK. Together, they form part of the team bringing positive changes through cultural shifts and formal policies. After hearing about the types of programmes and processes being introduced to make a difference, we'll talk to Nicole Barsby in part two. Nicole has been through the internal Women in Action programme, which is designed to support female team members in developing the skills required to thrive in more senior roles.
Hi everyone. Today I'm joined by two members of the Arval UK HR internal culture team. We've got Heather and Pamela with us today. I'll hand straight over to them for quick introductions and potted history of how they got to where they are today. So Heather, if we start with you, please.
Yeah, hi Adam. So I've been with Arval UK now for just over a year and a half, and I'm a senior HR business partner. I have worked in HR for the last 14 years, predominantly in startup businesses, actually, within the aerospace, automotive and energy industries. I've sort of started working in a startup, built everything around the HR department from recruitment to HR, ensuring we've got the right processes, culture, working environment, things like that. So had a very varied career to start with. And then before that, I was working in recruitment for about 12 years, again, within those industries of automotive and aerospace. I think that's well equipped me for being an HR business partner now.
Fantastic. Thank you. And Pamela?
Pamela Davey. I've been in the industry, leasing industry, about 20 plus years now, various leasing companies before I ended up here at Arval the last 5 years. Day job as a business manager, so I deal with large international clients who often have their own diversity and inclusion policies and activities. But I've been the lead for D&I at Arval for 4 years now. So we have a well-established ERG community of people with different lived-in experiences. So we work very closely with HR, with learning and development, with our people champs, you know, as a people collectively, what can we do to amplify the voices to make it, you know, the right place for people to come to work with us and stay with us. So yeah, that's where I fit into it. Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant. It's interesting, obviously, the mix here, how, you know, when we're talking about, you know, EDI, all of those various pieces to do with wider culture and sort of role within how we do things, it's interesting how you do definitely have that crossover where often there will be those internal subgroups and those internal teams of people from everywhere to represent the masses, with that common thread of HR sort of overseeing and guiding, perhaps. It's similar to what we're developing at the BVRLA, actually, as things stand. So I guess, Heather, if on that note, can you give a bit of background for how it does work from sort of that HR perspective? When I say it, I mean sort of that recruitment, retaining, development, specifically of female talent in this instance.
Yeah, so I think the ERG groups are really, really important gel and bring everything together that we're trying to do here to have a very inclusive culture. When it comes to recruitment, we have a talent acquisition team, and we have recruitment and selection training, mandatory training for all of our hiring managers to attend. And that specifically looks around the right way to bring somebody on board, how we attract the right kind of people for Arval. And also it looks at how diversity and unconscious bias play a big part, and actually being really aware of those biases and understanding how diversity can make us have more innovation within the team and more idea generating, things like that. So we put a big emphasis on that and ensure that all of our managers do that. And also it widens our recruitment channels as well, which is really important. And I think where we then align that to our ERG groups is the people pillar, for instance. and our people champs help communicate that within the business, and also are a great platform for feeding back to us within HR. So we know how our employees are feeling, and we can then react and build and grow our culture with that information. So that's how it works really well for us. And, you know, particularly we look at when we are recruiting, that we have that balanced scorecard list as well, where possible. It's not always possible, but where we can, we like to have that, so that we are sure that we've got, you know, an equal amount of men and women that we're looking at, and especially for those more senior roles that we've got.
That's really interesting. And I guess on that unconscious bias piece, I think that does increasingly come to the fore, because, you know, it's very well having sort of the right processes in place, and you mitigate as much as you can, but that crux with, you know, what's going on between someone's ears that you don't know about. What are the more sort of, are there any tangible examples of, or the steps you've taken to try and manage that and sort of readdress those unconscious elements?
Yeah, so I think that what was really interesting was the recruitment selection training that we've designed just recently that identifies how we actually like to recruit very similar people to ourselves, and actually for diversity and for all of that innovation, everything else, and for us to grow as a company, that wouldn't work. So it's what the training does is makes you incredibly aware about where you're going to lean towards when you're recruiting, and how you can physically stop yourself from doing that. And the way we do that is by templating our interview questions and aligning that to our behaviour framework, and looking at the competencies for the role, and ensuring that we're not just going and looking for a similar to what we've already got. We also do a lot around insights. And so insights are where we would look at the different behaviours within, you would fill out a survey when you were to join us, and you would look at the different behaviours that come out of people, and then you get sort of colour coded as such. And it's not that we want to put people in boxes, but what it does enable us to do is ensure we have a really diverse team. You know, you don't want lots of reds and very little blues. You know, you need a really good combination of all of the different colours to have a really high performing team. So we do a lot of work in the background around that as well. And I think those are our enablers. Yeah, sorry, Pamela.
And then just picking up on that unconscious bias stuff as well, is that perception. We're doing a lot of work, not just with gender, but with disability, with people who are neurodivergent as well. And we're saying that, you know, there might have been a perception, or we can't hire them because, you know, they didn't get a maths GCSE or something or other. Yeah. You know, we're breaking down those barriers, we realise the importance of having a diverse workforce and moving away from the stereotypes. So, and there's been a lot of work done recently on that as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. We are doing more on neurodiversity and gaining our understanding around what we need to do as a business to support people who are neurodivergent. And so we're doing a lot of that. And Pamela's absolutely right. On the disability, we've just introduced a new game that's going to be very thought-provoking for our hiring managers around biases around disability and how we see disability, because obviously a lot of disability is hidden and you don't know about it. So we're launching that in March, actually. And then we're going to run the games. We're actually training facilitators here. Then we're going to run the games through Diversity Week. So that's really exciting. And it's actually a very clever game that's been designed through one of our colleagues, and they are going to come and train us on how to do that. But it actually it tricks you into suddenly realizing how our biases work. So it's really thought provoking. So I think that's going to be really interesting to roll that out to the business.
And I think, as Heather said, there's a lot of stuff that we're doing in terms of you know, the recruitment and getting people into the business. But once they're there, how do the managers work with it and stuff like that? So a lot of the stuff that we do with the people champs and HR and our internal comms is about allyship, raising awareness, talking about these things, breaking down barriers. So in addition to some great videos that we've had from two of our colleagues for International Women's Day this year, where they're talking about their career progression and stuff like that, you know, we have support through menopause, just normal taboo subjects that people might just feel a bit uncomfortable. We're kind of creating that safe space to say, actually, if you do need help, we're here to support you. We spend a lot of time in the workplace. So it's making sure, you know, Heather's done some great work on the maternity side of things, but we've got breastfeeding rooms, you know, we've got the menopause champion. So collectively, it's not any one thing, but it's about a constant looking at it all the way through every day of our working life, rather than just going, here's the awareness day, we've done it, tick, move on. It's a constant evolving process for us.
And we build it into everything we're doing as well. So it's as Pamela says, it's not just on an awareness day. We are constantly educating and raising awareness, because actually a lot of biases come from not understanding topics like the menopause, things like that. But actually, I wanted to talk about the Women in Action, which is a talent program that we offer as well, which is another way actually in which we retain and grow our talent here. So from a recruitment point of view. So, and this is a corporate talent program which enables enables and encourages women to boost the leadership potential and equips them and enables them to move into leadership roles within Arval. And it's specifically for women, and it's to shift mindsets, I would say, to embed the gender equity in Arval's culture. And so the hope is that it will increase the number of female general managers, leaders, and prepare them to be our top managers within Arval. And it offers coaching and mentoring. And we've just had two of our leading females here complete that at the end of last year. And they've done some videos around what that was like and how it felt for them and how inclusive it was. And I think also what that helped as well with was they met other female leaders within the business and sort of was able to have those conversations about how do they balance the work-life balance and, you know, being working mothers and things like that and still be leaders. So that's another way in which we can retain our people and show that we value them and grow them. And that's been really, really positive.
I think
I was just going to say it's interesting because obviously the first point we touch upon with the recruitment, it's very much sort of the decision maker, the senior leaders in that direction. So it's what biases might they have consciously or otherwise. I guess that program, it's pushing it the other way. So it's empowering the less senior, the female members of the team who maybe don't have the confidence or don't see that path. This is it's giving them the confidence sort of push upwards. And then hand in hand with that, it's the senior leadership in the other direction, making sure that they're not sort of putting a ceiling unnecessarily or they're sort of helping pull people with them.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's a two-way process because sometimes we carry our own biases. We often say, I'm a woman, I'm not good enough or whatever, or, you know, this program kind of, you know, when I look at the videos, they talk about enrichment, and what I took from the videos was that these two women have been inspired themselves. And they're paying it forward because they're bringing that into their teams and they're inspiring other people and the next generation. So it's constantly helping. It's a win-win for them, for the business, for their teams and stuff like that. So, yeah, really useful program.
And I think you asked as well about how we grow our talent from our sort of entry level up to our senior level. And I would say that, you know, that paying it forward is absolutely correct because we have a lot of our senior female leaders are now mentoring our more junior females within the business. And they offer that informally a lot of the time, but also we're setting up more and more formal mentoring programs. And we have other talent programs, we have talent care, we have emerging talent, all of these different talent programs that we can put people on. And through that, they get mentors and they can build their networks within the business as well. And that can be internationally, so not just locally. And that again, helps them grow and develop. And I think we have a really lovely learning culture here, which enables all of that progressive behaviours and, you know, and role modelling the right behaviours for leadership and things like that. So there's a lot of that happens.
Yeah, that's interesting. Obviously, you say progressive then. I wonder if that's part of it where maybe for many we're still in that churn where those kind of behaviours, those kind of changes, you know, talking about the menopause, making space available for nursing mothers, they're seen as progressive as opposed to that's just the way you do things because why wouldn't you? And I guess that's obviously the journey that everybody is on of making that the norm instead of the more traditional, you know, pre-pandemic way of just, you got in, you did your work, you left, you didn't speak about family or have personal time or have exclusions when your child's ill and those kind of things that, you know, you see all the stats typically fall more on the mother than the father just because historically they have. It's making those steps so they are the norm and, you know, they're embedded just in your culture and you see the value with how it's paying forward and how the team are responding.
And it takes time and commitment and support from the exec all the way through and working collaboratively. You know, we work transversally together. We're not working in silos because there is that wider picture of making a difference to people that come into work because we do spend a lot of time in the workplace. And, you know, it's 1 in 10 women are still leaving the workplace because of menopause. You know, 2/3 of women between the ages of 40 to 60 will experience menopause symptoms. But again, you know, if I look back 5 years ago, that word probably would never have been mentioned in the workplace. And there's lots of companies that are doing that. We still have a lot that we want to do in lots of different areas. But by talking about it, we're making a start. We're breaking down some of those barriers. So, you know, I've had some of my male colleagues come up and say to me, oh, yeah, you're a menopause champion. My wife's going through this. And it's normal conversations that we wouldn't have had before. And that's what I think people feel safe about.
And interestingly, we got the perspective of one of our male leaders here on his journey through his wife's menopause. And that was, I think, a really nice piece for International Men's Week last November, International Men's Day. And he talked about what that felt like and how he could support and actually how what we've done here within Arvel has helped him understand more and gain more sort of education around it. I think that's so important. And another part of that is when mothers are returning back to work, we identified sort of, I suppose, early on last year that there's a vulnerability from talking to returning mothers, that vulnerability and the sort of the wobble you have and that imposter syndrome sometimes of coming back. You're a completely different person once you've had a child and you're coming back. And will I still be able to do the same thing? So we actually engaged with a maternity returner coach. We are already trialing that on a couple of our returners. And it's really successful. And they don't feed back to us. It's purely for that returning mother back into the business to help them and support them and be a coach and a guidance for those first, you know, 6 to 12 months of returning as an additional support. And actually through the DE&I part of the people pillar as well, we have a parent and carer network. And we also have instigated parent buddies through that to help with that whole first couple of weeks back, have a coffee with them, have a chat. You know, it feels really different and that's really normal to feel like that. And you know, from an HR point of view, we have a real understanding of that as well and a support and an empathy with them because it is hard, but we just want them to succeed. So we hope that those interventions that we've put in place there will help them to be successful as well.
Yeah, I think those kind of programs are so valuable. And like you say, it's treating people as people as opposed to, you know, employees or, you know, just a part of the team. It's the human element that I think you always see. There's evidence with how much better that is for productivity, for happiness, for motivation, for all of these pieces that ultimately make people better at their job and make them deliver more, but in a completely sort of mutually beneficial way. I mean, if we sort of round up slightly, obviously for the company you're at and the scale you have, you've got, you know, the space to sort of make these sort of certain spaces available and roll out these kind of programs. I guess for some of our smaller members that perhaps don't have those resources, what would your advice be? Sort of how do you make a start? What would that first step be? Or what's the key thing to get right first for others to follow?
Yeah, I think for me, I would always say, listen to your people. Your people are your most powerful asset. And if they are happy and they feel valued, they feel included and they feel listened to, you can't go wrong. And they will help you determine what the people plan looks like from an HR point of view, I think, and from the ERGs, you know, and all of those things. I think, you know, if somebody feels valued, listened to, respected, and included, you're going to get the best out of them. And don't make assumptions. Ask, always ask, keep up the communication. I think that's the key thing. And that costs nothing. And it's not always possible, of course. You know, we're very lucky. We're in a corporate environment, a large company, and so we are able to have the private medical insurance, all those sorts of things. But you know, you can do a lot without all of that as well, just by listening to your people, I would say.
Yeah, and I would 100% endorse that. Completely agree. And listen, and one of the things we've been trying to do, you know, because we're learning as well in the last couple of years, whether it's on health and wellbeing or the D&I group, is we've asked for people's feedback, and then it might not happen straight away, but we go, you said, we listened, and this is what we've done. It doesn't need to be big scale. We don't have an endless budget. It's just small little tangible things. So people go, my voice was heard, because that's what we really want, is we want to feel connected. We want to feel that people listen to us and hear us. So yeah, just now I agree with what Heather said. That would be my summary of it all.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. I think that's a perfect takeaway. You know, no matter how big or small you are, that advice is completely transferable to anyone, isn't it? And it just helps get on that journey and move forward, because it's ever evolving. It's not a, you know, we've completed that element, now onto the next. It's always moving. Yeah. So just getting stuck in and taking it serious, I think, is exactly the right way. Yeah. So thank you so much, both of you, for your time today. That was fantastic, really interesting to hear more. We're now joined by Nicole Barsby, who's head of business operations. We just heard Heather and Pamela talk to the Women in Action program, the run at Arvel. And Nicole is a living, breathing example of how that's come through, and somebody who's been on that program and come out the other side. Thank you so much for your time today, Nicole. If you could please kick off just by giving us a potted history of your career, and we can take it from there.
Sure. Okay, no problem. Thank you, Adam. So my career path at Arvel has been quite varied, actually. I first worked for Arvel as an 18-year-old to earn some money between my A-levels and university, just doing a basic data entry job. And then while I was at university, Arvel kept in touch with me. And when I graduated, they offered me a permanent role doing similar to work that I'd done for them before in data entry. So I started my life in finance, moved from finance onto customer implementation, so where we onboard new customers to the organisation. I've worked in both kind of sales segments that we have within Arvel UK, so our corporate sector and our retail sector. I've also managed a customer service element within the organisation, and then also had a secondment to our business transformation area as a project manager, as a work stream lead. So quite varied, and it's really enabled me to understand how the organisation fits together and join up the dots.
It's fascinating. It's always good to hear those cases of people, you know, coming in straight from school almost, or straight from university, and just finding that sweet spot of, you know, culture that works for them, opportunity.
Absolutely.
And then with regards to the programme specifically, which obviously it's, you know, developed to make sure there's a, you know, there are opportunities and people feel empowered and can see the progression that's available to them. At what point, sort of in that career you've just summarised, sort of did the Women in Action programme sort of come to life, and how did that then push you through the next few stages?
So I'd heard about the Women in Action programme, but hadn't really had any kind of or seen any sort of tangible evidence of it until I moved into my current role. So I moved into this role in operations in January of 2020. And two of my peers at the time went onto the programme. So obviously we had conversations about it, and they shared their experiences with me. So that was kind of the first time that I heard about it. And then I was approached in November, I think, of 2022. To say, actually, we think that we'd really like you to be a participant of the programme in 2023, which I have to say, I was really, I don't know why I was so surprised, but I was really surprised, but absolutely delighted to have been selected. So, yeah, it was a really exciting time.
Definitely. I know you just said exactly, you don't know why you're surprised, but if you could put your sort of put anything on that, was it a sort of maybe a lack of, I don't know, yeah, why do you think you were surprised to hear that? We just sort of
I think I was surprised because the roles that I'd had prior to the one that I'm in now, I'd kind of come up through the ranks. So actually, I knew everything about the areas that I worked in because I'd worked my way up. I knew exactly how everything worked in minute detail. I'd done most of the roles in the area. Whereas I took, for me, I'm quite risk adverse. So I took a risk in applying for the role that I'm in now. It's in a business area in the organisation that I'd never worked in before. I had quite limited knowledge, and because there's such a vast amount that happens in the area that I work in, I think I felt when, even though I'd been in role probably sort of 18 months, nearly 2 years, I still felt new, and I felt like I maybe didn't know enough or have enough experience to be seen as senior enough to go on the programme, I guess. That's probably what it was.
That's interesting. And it's funny, speaking to, you know, senior leaders and other people in this space, they always say it's as much about the transferable skills and the person being the fit as much as it is, you know, the hard Absolutely. Skills or hard roles they had, which I think is exactly what you've just alluded to. And then in terms of going through that, obviously an initial piece, having that sort of mechanism internally for you to look at, it gave you the, you know, the ability to see maybe that you could use your skills in different ways. What sort of other kind of benefits do you feel you had from, you know, being picked out in that way and being given that opportunity?
In terms of what the programme has brought to me personally, do you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. I think there are three things, actually. I was going to say there are two, but there are probably three. And I'll probably do them in order, actually. So the two things that were huge for me on the programme were the mentoring aspect of it and some coaching that we had on public speaking. They both absolutely terrified me, the idea of both of those things. I was really excited to get my mentor assigned. And when we found out who our mentors were on the programme, I obviously did a little bit of research and some background history on the person that I was working with. And then actually scared myself doing that research because he was a really interesting chap and he'd done so much and, you know, was very, very senior in the organisation. And equally, the public speaking coaching was something, it's an area that I'm really not confident in. And it really, really pushed me. Both of those aspects really pushed me out of my comfort zone, actually, when I participated in the programme. But I gained so much from them. When I look back now, I can see myself. My line manager has been fantastic and she's seen the transition in me. But sometimes you don't see that in yourself quite so quickly, do you? But now I can look back and see actually what I have gained from it and where I've sort of improved. And I was really, really lucky with my mentor. He was absolutely brilliant and really made me think about my strengths and not just about strengths in terms of at work and who I am as a leader, but also as a person and as a human being amongst, you know, many, many, many other things that we discussed. And in terms of the public speaking element, again, the coach that we had was absolutely fantastic. And at the end of the programme finishes with a presentation to the COMEX at their headquarters in Paris. And you don't have any slides, you don't have notes, and actually you have to learn your pitch and then you have to just do it in front of the COMEX and then obviously take questions and have feedback. And I still actually now look back and can't believe that I did that. And that sounds a bit silly, I guess, but I really, really struggled with public speaking and presenting. It's something that I really am not comfortable with. It's not something that I'm naturally good at. But I did it and I did a competent job and I had some really good feedback. So that for me was really tangible evidence of the success of the course, actually, for me personally.
Yeah. And I think that standalone, it's a really good example of somewhere where I think a lot of people would have a similar trepidation or similar, you know, lack of confidence in doing that. You know, public speaking is always one of those things that some people just love and they'll do it every opportunity.
Some people absolutely do, and I am not one of them.
A much bigger majority, I would suspect. So I guess there's the value to you that, you know, it's being given that opportunity and it's being given the confidence that, you know, you can do it. Let's get stuck in. Let's just sort of almost absolutely. Force you down that path. You have to
absolutely sort of, and I think it. The other thing for me, and this is the third thing, and again it's something that I look that I can see now with hindsight looking back, there are things that I've done since I completed the course where I've used things that I've learned or people that I've met on the course, other women, other participants that I just wouldn't meet in my day-to-day work. I'm not going to meet our CFO in Chile on a day-to-day basis, but she was on the course and she's somebody that I've now got a relationship with. And there are just other elements from my mentor, elements from the other participants, and just the skills I've learned, for example, from the public speaking coaching that I'm now using and bringing into my day-to-day role. And this is, you know, the program has afforded me that opportunity, and I'm not sure I would have learned those things quite so quickly if I hadn't been a participant.
And I guess within that process, and as you're sort of going through and getting these, you know, new skills, how much does sort of gender play a role? Obviously, it's the foundation of the course to try and bring that sort of slightly more level playing field, I think is, you know, essentially how Heather described it. Is that sort of the be all end all, sort of the starting point? And then once you're in the program, it's more just about leadership, it's about skills.
No, I think it's a combination of both, to be fair, Adam, actually, in terms of actually what happens in the program. So you start the program, you have some fairly in-depth questionnaires to complete about yourself. And the questionnaire helps to form the basis of a development plan that you then work on with a coach, and you meet with a female coach at the start of the program, and then you meet with the coach at the end of the program, and you go through your development plan and see, have you achieved the items that you identified at the start of the program or not, and actually then what does the future look like after the program's kind of finished. So that was the kind of start. There's of course a networking element, so you know, you get to meet other women that you just wouldn't meet in your day-to-day working life generally, you know, so that's a fantastic thing, and that network has continued for me, and it's also continued for people who were on the course previously. So there's now this kind of growing network of women across the organization and across all of the ARVL countries, which is really, really kind of good to see. I think the other thing is, touching on gender, is there were a number of guest speakers on the program, the majority of which were women. And it was really interesting just to get some insight from senior leaders from the group, but also from outside the group, about, you know, what their career paths were, what were the challenges that they faced in their careers, how do they balance their work and home lives. You know, we talked about imposter syndrome, you know, we had tools like career GPS to help give more structure to planning your career path, all of which were delivered by some fantastic women. So it's definitely a key part of the program, as well as leadership.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. And I guess one of the pieces, again, that comes up within any conversation around diversity is that visibility and people being able to see people like them in, you know, senior roles or in industries that they might not see as open to them. And I guess that point you touched upon with the community and meeting senior people from different departments and different industries helps to show people that. So, you know, you realise you haven't necessarily got a ceiling where you are. There is that scope and there are the pathways in place.
Absolutely. And I think this, you know, it's opened up a network to me, you know, on a personal level, but of course on a professional level as well. And I think the other thing that it's helped, the community aspect, sometimes you think, you know, there can be a perception that the community thing is a bit forced, and actually it's not a real thing. But when you go on these programs and you're in quite intense situations together, you're going through experiences together with this group of women, and you have conversations with other women outside of that group, but you realize that actually a lot of the challenges and a lot of the things that you face and a lot of the dilemmas that you have, they're all the same. And that's what creates that community, that's what binds us together.
It's funny, that's one of the threads I think from a few of the conversations we've had in this series, that is one of the threads. It's people understanding that people are, you know, that everyone's human, everyone
people
goes
people,
through a very different thing. Yeah,
yeah.
I was trying to avoid saying people like four times in the sentence, but you're absolutely right. And I think it's that human element that it keeps coming through. Everybody who's been doing sort of any work or any progress or leading the way in this space, that's ultimately seems to be the crux that comes back to it. And then you mentioned obviously some of the, you've got the sort of the social and the network element, you've got the skills that have come from doing the public speaking and the sort of the presentations. What other benefits do you feel you've gained from sort of going through that process? And
so I think certainly the I guess the not attention, it's not necessarily the right word, maybe awareness across the organisation at a more senior level that I've been a participant in the programme. You know, I've had some really good feedback from some colleagues in Corporate Centre, which has been fantastic. And also it's really helped me, it's helped me think about, focus on what I want next in my career, but it's really, really helped me on, in terms of my confidence around that presentation piece. It's actually quite a key part of my role now, and being an effective communicator and being able to communicate at all levels is a key part of that. And this program has really given me the skills to actually embrace that and see that actually I'm all right at it. If I use what I've learned on the program, the outcome is normally quite successful, and I am quite good at it. And it's just given me that confidence, and it's given me, I think, most importantly, because it's something you don't get in day-to-day working life, I think, because everything's, you know, everyone's very busy, but it's given me time to think about me and myself in the workplace and personally, because you've got you had a coaching aspect on the course as well. And what was really good is you're able to kind of separate, there's the professional element, which is what I tended to focus more on with my mentor on the program, but there's also the personal element, and that was what I tended to focus on with my external coach. So together they've really, really helped and have given me that time and that kind of headspace to think about who I am and what I like and where I want to go next in my career.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that's, so if I come back to the human point, you need both of those elements in tandem, don't you?
Yes.
Otherwise it's, you know, that perhaps previously there's been a focus on, here are the hard skills you need to do this function and this job, and
yes,
it's very sort of a narrow path, and people are,
and that's it, it's
more holistic.
There's some practical skills as well that I've learned obviously from the course, but that combined with the external coaching and the mentoring, it's a really good combination, and it's very, in my experience, is very, very effective.
Yeah. I mean, within that, and again, this is sort of a slight curveball I've thrown to each of the interview quite often, actually, I use it. Obviously, with the programme you were on, it, you know, it's a big established programme with a lot of structure, giving you access to certain resources, trainers, colleagues from across the globe in many cases, if you said. What are the key things that you think are transferable to maybe a smaller company or somebody that doesn't have access to that kind of resource?
So I think in terms but for someone that doesn't have an established program, there are one of the things that programs taught me is there are materials actually out there available that you don't need to be part of a program to have access to. So there's lots of information online. And one of the tips from the guy that did our public speaking coaching was actually, right, there's some videos here. You can go onto YouTube and just put this into the search function. And these are the sorts, you know, these are the sorts of things that will come up. So it's just kind of thinking about things like that, really. If there's something, an area that you want to improve on, or something that you want to learn more about, or learn some practical skills or techniques on, there's lots and lots of information online, and it's just something that I probably hadn't considered fully before doing the programme. Obviously, you've got an awareness that there's, all of this stuff out there, and actually you can find most things these days on the internet, but it isn't something that I'd particularly looked into, but I did as a result of this programme, and there's tons of material out there that anyone can access, I think, probably on pretty much any topic.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned YouTube, because I keep hearing that TikTok is sort of, it's overtaking everyone as that sort of go-to search function.
Yeah.
Now for those sort of tips and,
yeah,
you know, recipes, and I'm sure it will evolve into that space too, if not sort of the
TED Talk
and the resources
you I think for things like, so you know, for me it was about, actually I want to see somebody presenting, you know, actually practically doing the thing that I'm nervous about, so I can actually work, you know, get some visual understanding and pick up things that way. That was one of the ways that I learned some of the skills that we were taught on the program. But yes, I'm sure TikTok will be the place rather than YouTube.
Well, maybe a few years from now, I'd still very much be of that, go to YouTube. I want to do any DIY or tips, like you say.
Yeah.
But it's funny, because I guess that's where the value of having the company culture supporting this kind of thing comes in. Because as you say, the tips and the resources are all out there, but but individuals might not necessarily think to seek them out or think it's a route for them to even consider looking through until they've been given that vote of confidence almost from the employer saying, you know, we see something in you, we're going to back you.
Yeah.
And then you can sort of snowball from there. So I guess, again, as with everything, you probably need the two in tandem, don't you, where the employer is supporting it.
I think so. And actually, you know, another thing I think is, you know, word of mouth as well is very powerful. So, you know, if there are things, so just as an example, so I've got a colleague in my team, she's having some development conversations with a member of her team. And I just sent her a link to something that I found on YouTube to help with career planning. And again, that was a tool as a result of a program. But for me, it's really important that I share the sorts of things that can help other colleagues in the organization who aren't necessarily going to have access to the program. But actually, you know, there's still some material out there. So I can, you know, yes, I've been lucky enough to have been a participant, but I can still share that information as well with the, you know, with my colleagues so that everyone then starts to get the benefit.
Yeah, I think that's it. And it, like you say, you benefited from having the community that you've been connected with, and then it snowballs from there, and more people can benefit, and everybody can help each other along instead of it being sort of too formal or formulaic, and you just get that overspill, and everybody can pull up together. And
yeah, absolutely, and knowledge share. And also, I think, you know, there is a greater awareness now, I would say, of the Women in Action program than there might have been a few years ago. As I say, my first introduction to it or being aware of it was 2020, I think, and I think that's not long after it first came to fruition, actually. But there is definitely a growing awareness out there, and you know, you don't need to be part of the Women in Action community. You can always create your own community, can't you, locally? So,
yeah, I think that's a fantastic takeaway, because a lot of the people who listen to this, you know, they will be from our smaller members and maybe don't have the resources for that. But as you say, you can still take that initiative, still take that first step to make a start, and then look to the likes of Arvel for sort of that, you know, total. If you can do the best of the best, you can sort of get up to those kind of programs. But there's a lot of positive stuff you can do.
I mean, you know, I think as well as, you know, if I take it, I guess, back to its most basic level, actually, it's women in the context of International Women's Day and in the context of the Women in Action program, it's women talking to women. So actually, we've all got female colleagues that we work with that we can talk to and exchange views and understand each other's challenges. So, you know, you've got the online piece that I was talking about earlier, but actually, it's women talking to each other about their experiences, their challenges, sharing ideas, and we've all got the opportunity to do that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for your time. It's been fantastic hearing from you today and building on what your colleagues were saying just earlier. So thank you very much, and we'll leave you there.
Thank you for listening. Please leave a 5-star rating on your podcast platform if you enjoyed this. If you would like to join as a guest, email digital@bvrla.co.uk.